Welcome to episode 139 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. As I record this, the Winter Olympics are taking place in Sochi, in Russia. Of course, it'll be no surprise to hear that I'll be keeping a keen eye on what my fellow photographers are up to as they record the various events over the next couple of weeks. Now, it never ceases to amaze me the lengths we go to in order to get the visually stunning imagery that we want, helped of course by the latest developments in technology. Well, seeing an airborne remote camera setup on some recent TV coverage, I was reminded of a presentation I attended at last year's Focus on Imaging, given by Time Slice Films on the Nikon stand. So in this week's show, I'm bringing you that presentation, discussing the wonders of frozen time multicam photography. Now, in order to keep the show to time, I've cut out the visual presentations you'll hear announced, but of course be sure to check out the various links in the show notes for examples of what is being discussed. Here we go then. Welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 139.
My name's Callum. I'm CEO of Time Slice Films. Time Slice Films is a camera array company, so we specialise in the design and operation of multi-camera systems and camera arrays, which is kind of like what we've got above your heads there, which is 50 Nikon D800s. This is one of our latest systems. What does a camera array look like? Well, when it's configured, it comes in all different shapes and sizes. This is just some of the examples of the configurations that we do. And we travel all around the world with multicam. We've shot in Fiji and China, Canada, all across Europe, South Africa, and for all kinds of different things. So at the top you can see a 360 degree green screen rig. So that's where all the cameras are looking from the outside of a circle into the middle, and we're imaging a subject or object in the middle. We've done lenticular. Who's familiar with lenticular printing? So you can look at things like a holograph when it's printed out. We've done lenticular rigs. And then at the bottom here, you can see very large rigs we've done for visual effect shots. What I'm going to do next is play a show reel, which is examples of previous work that we've done. And I'm going to talk a little bit about where multicam's going. We've got some really exciting things to show you about what's going to happen in the future. And also, I'll sort of talk a little bit about the history and how this all came about, basically. So here is our show reel. So lots and lots and lots of examples in there of multicam, and it's used for all kinds of different things. There is interactive digital content in there for website, e-commerce. There was visual effect shots, Street Dance 3D. I don't know if any of you have seen that film, but we actually did the world's first stereoscopic multicam shots for that. So if you had the glasses, it'd actually be three-dimensional. Okay, so where does it come from, though? You know, what's the history of multicam? And to answer that question, you've actually got to go back to the start of photography. Multicam is as old as photography. So we have Fox Talbot, and we have the beginning of the photographic process. And then, obviously, that gives birth to the sort of photographic pioneers. One particular gentleman, Edward Muybridge, he is an early multicam pioneer. He was hired by Leland Stanford, who's the governor of California at the time, to settle an argument. And the question was, does a horse ever have all four of its hooves off the ground at the same moment in time during the locomotive cycle of it galloping? And to answer that question, Muybridge said, I know what we need to do. We'll have more than one camera, because the locomotion of a horse galloping is so fast the human eye can't possibly tell what's going on there. So initially, he rigged a load of cameras along the race course and used tripwires to trigger the cameras. So the horse's hooves would be galloping along, each hoof would trigger a tripwire and that would fire a camera. You can see in the background there where that shed is and the numbering, that's where the actual cameras are. And behind each shutter, he had a stereoscopic pair of lenses. So it was actually stereoscopic, this rig. There's the tripwires. And then later on, he designed an electromechanical trigger. And this allowed him to vary the timings of the shutters of the camera in relation to the speed of the subject that he was photographing. And this was highly effective and allowed him to fine-tune when the cameras would trigger. And if you look above you, ladies and gentlemen, above the cameras, we've got some little black boxes. In those boxes is a modern-day version of Muybridge's trigger that allows us to fire the cameras all at the same moment in time, or we can program them and fire them sequentially one after another, or in pairs or groups or whatever we want to do. But really, that's where it started with Muybridge. So here's an example of one of his photographic sequences from Multicam. In the bottom left-hand corner, you can see the numbering that relates to each camera. And we jog on a frame. There we go, result. Argument settled. There's the proof. The horse does have all four of its hooves off the ground at the same moment in time. So, what happened to camera A after Muybridge? Well, you've actually got to think about the broader use of photography and also how it crossed over in an artistic way with other disciplines. The Cubist painters were actually influenced quite heavily by the early photographers of the day, and there was a very open dialogue between the two camps. Now, my brother Tim, who founded Time Slice, he's a lot older than me, he was at art college in the early 1980s, and he was a Cubist painter who then got into photography. And he reversed that dialogue, basically. He said, well, what if I take the principles of simultaneity and multiple facets, looking at multiple angles in one go? What if I take those Cubist principles and apply that to photography? At the time, being a student, he didn't have much money, so he worked with the pinhole. And the very first multi-cam, multi-aperture camera, should we say, used pinholes. So if you think about it, there's a subject in space, here are pinholes, and if we expose all of them at the same point in time, each pinhole will render a slightly different perspective of that subject. And that is one of the very first pinhole multicam systems. I'd actually say that's not really a camera array, it's a camera with multiple apertures. So on the inside of that hoop were 360 pinholes, and then inside there was a strip of film that was loaded in and tensioned. And then there was no shutters, so it was exposed in the dark using flash. That was 1980. This is May 1993. This was a really important moment for the evolution of multicam. What happened here was one of Tim's cameras was picked up by the science program on BBC called Tomorrow's World. I'm sure some of you would be familiar with that program. And, They did a piece on multicam. And if you watch this, you'll get an explanation.
Extraordinary events that happen too fast for the human eye, like this high-speed flash picture of a drop of liquid. Well, one photographer wondered how else time could be brought to a complete standstill. He imagined he could see a bucket of water suspended in time and space, and that he could move freely around it. To produce that image, he built this. It's a camera that's loaded with movie film. And on the inside of this loop are hundreds of tiny pinholes that have the same effect as lenses. So it's like hundreds of cameras all pointing at the space in the middle. There are no shutters on it, so the picture has to be made working in the dark using a flash. And to make an exposure, you simply take your subject and tuck it through the loop, triggering a flash. Now, the resulting strip of film can then be made into a loop, producing a mini movie of that single moment in time. It looks quite arty, so sit back, relax, and take a look at these.
You find some weird stories in the medical...
I don't know if you saw in that, but there was like light streaks and things in some of the shots. Because it's obviously pinhole and open shutter, you can experiment with doing long exposure and then flash to get your principal image. But this was the most contentious moment from that film. The dog. after that was shown on Tomorrow's World, the BBC switchboard was jammed with complaints. People phoning up, complaining about this poor dead dog that had been mistreated. You know, how dare we do something arty with a dead animal? They didn't understand that the dog was alive. It was fine. It was just a three-dimensional rendering of that moment in time. The whole idea of the circular camera was to render a cyclic, looped moment. And that was very telling, because at that point in our visual language, in our day-to-day understanding, multicam was not there, and people found it quite shocking. It was interesting. So this is a further progression of the multi-aperture cameras that Tim built. There was an inset rig that allowed us to do macro work, and that had a lot of use for BBC Natural History. They loved it because it was a way of imaging insects and fast-moving creatures that couldn't have been done before. And then the rigs got a little bit more sophisticated. Again, this isn't really a camera array. This is still one camera. This camera's got 120 glass lenses with an aperture behind each one. At one end, you have a 400-foot magazine of film. We use VistaVision film, so widescreen film. And you had a take-up spool at the other end and two big crank handles. And what you'd do is you would wind the film through the back of the camera so each frame corresponded with one of the apertures. And then you would tension the film and lock it off. And then in front of those lenses, this was one of the first rigs where we had a shutter. And that was great, because then we could go back to doing kind of what MyBridge did. We're able to fire the cameras sequentially, one after another, but using film. And it made for some quite interesting shots. If you look at this one, ladies and gentlemen, you see that what we've got there is, it looks like a track and dolly shot where we're moving left to right. Yeah? But halfway through, time goes backwards. But we're still going in the same direction. It's a paradox. It's an impossible camera move. Only achievable with multicam. Has anyone got any idea how it was done? Exactly, sir. You start with the outer two cameras, and you trigger those two, then the next two, then the next two, until you get to the middle. And when you animate the pictures back, obviously, you'll get a forwards-backwards movement. Etienne Jules Moiré, stroboscopic, multiple exposures. Again, this was all translatable into multicam. So here we've got a bush baby, and we used the multiple exposure technique to show the trajectory of that bush baby when it's jumping. But because it was multicam, we had multi-trajectory perspectives. We're able to move around that in three-dimensional space. And this was great. We filmed this in our studio, which was in Bath at the time. We had a big glass tank, which we contained the bush baby in to stop it bouncing off around the studio. And it just shows that everything that we're doing is really rooted in the beginnings of photography. There's a real history to all this stuff. Okay, this is about 12 years ago, and this is what I'd say is our first kind of modern day camera array. This was still film cameras. This was Nikon F5s, SLR cameras. There's 10 of them on the back of a very small boat. And that boat with my brother in it was sent to South Africa to go and film great white sharks breaching. And I'm glad I wasn't in that boat, to be honest. Nikon very kindly lent us 85mm prime lenses, which we put on the cameras. And then all those cameras were fixated a good few meters out the back of the boat where there was a lure, rubber dummy, which looked like a seal. And the shark then thought, oh, there's breakfast, let's go for that. Went for the dummy and breached, and then we'd get the photograph. You can see there's the cameras there. Everything's cabled up. We had an electronic trigger to fire them all at the same moment in time. I think my brother had very bad toothache that day, actually. Not too good. Anyway, that's the result. Really powerful moment. And what's interesting is 12 years ago, this is about the same time as The Matrix came out, which I'm sure you know is one of the most kind of well-known uses of multicam. Again, they shot on film SLR cameras. And one of the things that was used in The Matrix was a technique called optical flow or interpolation. And that's a technique used to slow the duration of a shot down. So here's our original 10 frames. And here's an interpolated version. So what we're doing there is we're taking physical photographs and we're doing a sort of morph. The computer is using an algorithm to guess where between the first camera and the second camera, where it should make in between frames. So it takes any object, any pixel, and tries to add more pixels in virtual frames that would match the path between your real cameras. And that then takes what is a very short shot and turns it into something that's more three-dimensional. It's like a three-dimensional photograph. It allows the viewer to really study the moment and understand the subject matter. Here's another example. This is again about 12 years ago. So we're filming in Morocco and we had to do a vertical tracking shot. Now it's very hard to rig lots of SLR or DSLR cameras vertically. So again, we wanted to travel as light as possible. We used as few cameras as possible and used the interpolation technique. So this is the shot from that photograph that you just saw of the array. So in TV land, if we'd just taken those 10 frames, you'd have had a shot that would have lasted half a second. And with the interpolation, we can make it last as long as we want. Here's one on the horizontal axis. It's not an easy process. It doesn't work on every shot, and you have to think when you're photographing your subject matter, you have to think how this is going to work in post-production. But when it's done well, it does look amazing. That kind of brings us up to current day. So this is an advert for the London Dungeons, which has just come out about a week or so ago. They're relocating to the South Bank near the London Eye, and we're asked to get involved to do the promotional advert for their move. And it uses all the techniques that I've covered so far. So we've got multiple cameras, we've got interpolation, then we've got virtual movement. What do I mean by virtual movement? Well, these cameras, particularly these Nikon D800s, are 36 megapixels. And in TV land, that's way more resolution than you necessarily need. That enables us to zoom in on the photograph. So on a time slice shot, as you're tracking around it, you can actually zoom in and move around in the frame. We call that pan and scan. And what you're going to see, ladies and gentlemen, is all the stuff that you're going to see was shot locked off on rigs like this. So you would have had a wide tracking shot that you'd have moved around or along. Then what's been done in post is we've zoomed in and done this pan and scan technique to create a very handheld feel. You see what I mean? Okay, so again, bang up to date. Really excited to show you this. The embargo on this was only lifted yesterday. We did a big 100 camera rig for Rolls-Royce for their new car, which launched at the Geneva Motor Show yesterday. It's the Rolls-Royce Wraith. And this was an incredibly challenging shoot as well. This was a night shoot in Spain, and that rig had to be in two different positions. So we started in that position. This camera at this end is 3.6 meters in the air. The camera at the other end is just about a meter high. And then we had to take that 100 camera rig after we'd shot the car in one position and move it about 20 feet that way and shoot again. And it was one of the longest days of my life, I think. This just launched yesterday. So I'm going to show you the film and an example of how this is used in other ways as well. And for those of you that are interested in buying it, I think it sells for over £200,000 and does 0 to 60 in about 4.4 seconds, apparently. If I just come out of here a second, we go to the website. Let's have a look. Okay. So we're on the Rolls-Royce website here. Is the internet packed in? Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Looks like the Wi-Fi stopped. But what I was going to show you there was the same time slice shot that you had in the video as an interactive piece online. So you'd be able to move around the car using your mouse or on your tablet. And that was an example of basically, with multicam, you can shoot once and distribute many times. So you could take a multi-camera shot and use it as a visual effects piece, but it also could be put online for interactive content and e-commerce, and it could be put into digital magazine. There's tons of different uses for this type of content. So anyway, it's enough of me talking for a moment. I was thinking we could actually do some shots, and got the lovely Katie here. We can do a couple of little demonstrations. Hello.
Hello.
You all right?
Yeah, good.
Good kids.
I
think it's probably best too, isn't it? Right, I'm going to go down here because I don't want to be in this photograph. So, hello, sir. Okay, so we're going to take a shot. Your eye line is that yellow bit of tape up there. It's the middle camera on the array. And shall I count you in? Okay. 3, 2, 1. Hey. Okay. It's a bit of an anticlimax, actually. Okay. 3, 2, 1. Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Katie. Does anybody else want slicing? Anybody? It's the last day today, last day of Focus on Imaging. Who wants their soul capturing forever? Brilliant. Coming up, guys. Oh, lots of you. Okay. Bunch up. Yeah, you don't want to drop those. Do you want to practice? Well, jumps, that kind of thing. Well, you know, lots of action. That bit of yellow tape up there is your eye line. So sort of jumping towards that. I'll count you down. 3, 2, 1. We'll do a little practice. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, oh, you've done this before. That's very good. All right, one more. 3, 2, 1. Hey. All right, guys. Round of applause, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks a lot. Okay, so moving on. Camera array today. This is what we've got. Multicam visual effects. So that's like the showreel that we showed you at the beginning, or the London Dungeons piece. Next up, live to air. Live to air is basically using these cameras for a replay tool for sporting events or live entertainment, music concerts. These rigs can be set up and fired, and then the images can be processed very quickly. We're talking like seconds, and then they're ready for replay. And that's going to become more common. You're going to see these rigs at these events, and it will just provide another way for the viewers to kind of look at this content. And then at the bottom, this rotating subject here, what's that? Well, this is free viewpoint media. And this is what I want to talk about next, basically, because this is the biggest emerging market for multicam, and it's also going to change the way we do photography for everybody. So what is it? Well, basically, what you saw with MyBridge and everything we've done up till now is animating photographs. So we take a shot off one of these rigs and we go camera one, camera two, camera three, and we animate them like a flipbook. 3D Point Media uses a process called photogrammetry, and you can wiki photogrammetry if you really want to geek out on it. But basically, that's the process of defining shape from photographs. We're actually able now, using computational algorithms, to make objects from photographic information. So instead of animating our photographs, we're making a data set. And then you load those photographs, that data set, into a particular piece of software, and it makes a CGI model, so it's polygons. And then you put the photographic texture back over the polygons. And that creates an object. And that really changes things, because suddenly you've had a multicam system that's done visual effects traditionally, and it's become a real tool now. Using these cameras allows you to do a new type of photography. And just like MyBridge, photogrammetry and free viewpoint media isn't new. It's Félix Nadar, very famous French photographer. And Nadar was interested in the same principle. He called it photo sculpture. And this gentleman here is Admiral Glasgow Farragut. He was a very famous admiral from the Union Navy during the American Civil War. And I'm not quite sure how it came about, but Nadar did a 24-camera, 360-degree image of Farragut. Lurking in the background there, you can actually see Nadar fiddling with one of his cameras. 140 years later, that's one of our rigs for doing photo sculpture. And I know it looks a bit draconian, but it's fine. It doesn't bite. So what I want to show you next is how 3 viewpoint media can be used. And this is a really good case study. Basically, Hello Magazine wanted to do something to commemorate the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, and Gary Barlow there was very instrumental in organising things for the Jubilee. On top of that, they wanted it to fit in with their new remit, which is digital. This is one of the big challenges that magazines face, is what do you do in this digital frontier? You've got the printed version and the lit version, this new digital magazine. How do you make content that's engaging and different and basically more? You're augmenting the printed version. And we came up with the idea of doing an app for them. So Katie, if we can get you back up here a sec, if you get that up. This is the front cover of Hello Magazine for that week. And there's the actual magazine, so that's a bigger version. On here was a sticker which told whoever bought the magazine that they could get a free app for Android, iPhone, iPad, and you could download it, and it gave you some additional information about that week's issue. Pop that down there. So what I've got here is the app on my iPad. Let me just get that up. There we go. And the app uses augmented reality. Who knows what augmented reality is here? AR. Hand up there, right at the back. Hiya. Okay, augmented reality is the use of computationally enabled screens, like your phone or your iPad. And you've got a video camera on it. There we go. There's everybody. AR is taking that video feed and augmenting it with additional information. And in this case, we've taken one of our photogrammetry scans of Gary Barlow and we've put that into AR. If I point it at the front cover of the magazine, suddenly we have a three-dimensional image of Gary. So if you rotate left a bit, Katie, you'll see that Gary really pops off the screen there. This is the world's first three-dimensional front cover of a magazine. And if I zoom in, you can see there's a reasonably good amount of texture detail there as well. And I can obviously look under here. So this is the next evolution of the time slice shot. Instead of animating photographs, we're getting shape from photographs using multicam. And this really is the evolution of television. Whether you're broadcasting on TV or online, we've had black and white TV, we've had colour TV. The next thing that we're going to have over the next 20 years is broadcasting shape and form. Our photography and our videography systems will get more and more evolved, and they will be able to render and capture the world around us in three-dimensional shape and form. So this is the very early days of this. 20 years' time, your children and children's children will be very used to looking at content in a free viewpoint way. Free viewpoint media will be ubiquitous. Right now, it's just the very early days of this. I've got some other examples to show you. There you go. Always a bit nervous about showing this one. Okay. Got to go on the other app. Hang on a sec. This is another name that we use, sculptural photography. So we just get the augmented reality bit working. Stinking. Come on. Here we go. Right. There we go. Might recognize this person. Now, again, these early tests were shot on our Nikon D300S system. With Gary Barlow, and that previous one that you saw, we squeezed 40 cameras into this poor woman's kitchen where we were filming for the Gary Barlow one, because we had to fit in with the celebrity still shoot, and that was the location they needed. And it's very challenging taking rigs this size and putting them, you know, on location, and that's going to only get better as technology increases. But this one was shot with a rig very similar to that green screen 360 one that looked a bit sort of scary. Basically, this was used to kind of simulate what detail we could get if we had 36 megapixel cameras from head to toe, which we have now. So if we did a full body scan instead of just a headshot, let's put James May to the bottom of the stack, actually. We'll come back to him. This is Callum Rex Reed. It's another Callum. He's CEO of DigiCave, which is our partner company. And this is a full body scan. Again, this was shot on Nikon D300S. But still, you know, the texture detail is pretty good, and we have to compress these files down because you've got to download this stuff to your digital device, so it can't be a big file size. You can tilt him. At the moment, the way it works is the device has to see this thing here, this pattern. That's what it locks onto. On the Gary Barlow one, it was the front cover of the magazine. That was the trigger for the augmented reality piece. In the very near future, you won't need these markers. You'll just be able to point it at something, and once the camera's looked at it for a couple of seconds, it'll go, right, that's my trigger, I'll lock onto that. And obviously, the other thing is motion. You know, we're doing stills photography in free viewpoint. Can we do motion in free viewpoint? Well, the answer is yes. At the moment, the way we're doing it is taking a three-dimensional still model and we're applying motion capture data to it. So if you think about Gollum from Lord of the Rings, it's that kind of principle. But what we had here was James May. If I'd got audio on the iPad, you'd hear him talking about steam trains and aeroplanes and things, because this was part of an app that was built for the Science Museum. And what it was is if you downloaded the Science Museum app, you went and looked at the exhibit, you wanted to understand more about the exhibit, you'd point your device at a marker and James May would pop up and tell you about it. And just incidentally, the rig that you saw a little while back in the presentation, the one with the dolphin jumping next to it, that's now in the National Science Museum. It's actually become part of the National Archive. Okay. Brilliant. Thanks, Katie. So, any questions, ladies and gentlemen? This is my last day here. I've really enjoyed Focus on Imaging, but I'm happy to, you know, field some questions if anybody wants to know anything. Yes, sir. Software for the interpolation. There's two that are pretty good. There's Twixter by Revision and Kronos by the Foundry. They're both very good bits of plugins. Anyone else, guys? Okay, well, we'll just see if there's been a render completed. I'm not sure if you've got what shots we've got yet, but I'll see. Oh, there's the Wacom group from earlier on. Let's have a look at this. Fine-looking bunch. There we go. So we shot the Wacom team just before we started this presentation. And that gives you an idea of the kind of virtual camera movement that you can get with zooming in and out there and using the resolution of the D800s. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed Focus on Imaging. I've had a great time, and thanks for attending. Cheers.
Don't forget to check those show notes in order to find out more about TimeSlice and the latest developments in this exciting area of our craft. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I will speak to you all very soon.
Member of the CurrentPhotographer.com podcast network. Find more great photography shows at CurrentPhotographer.com/podcast.